So, welcome to the Sunday night. There is a solution, newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. Visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Please help me welcome our speaker, Rachel Kay, a compulsive overeater from
Indiana.
thank you, and a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. So, welcome, Rachel.
Hi, thank you, Lynn. Hi, I'm Rachel Kay, compulsive overeater from Indiana. And I am so glad to be here. And I really am. Last night I was talking with a sponsee, and she asked me, she said, "I want to ask you something." She said, "When I ask how you're doing, you always say good." She said, "Is that like a positive thinking thing, or is that like a, you know, that like you don't want to talk about your problems because I'm your sponsee thing? Or is that just like are you really like good when I ask you?" And I answered and I said, "It's actually because I'm good. Like usually I'm good." That, let me tell you, is a miracle. I'll start off by qualifying, but just the fact that I can say that and say that honestly, I mean, it's not, I don't want to skip to the end, here. It's not all, you know, rainbows and unicorns, but, I am so grateful because, that's not always how it was. So I came into my first OA meeting in 1985. I was 15 years old. So get out your abacus. So I'm 53. And I came in because I wanted to die. I am a low bottom compulsive overeater. I am a draw the curtains, don't answer the phone, gather all my food around me, binger. And at 15 years old, walking into that OA meeting, I found out about OA from an Ann Landers column. For those of you who are under 30, ask some of us who are over 30 who Ann Landers was. Anyway, she was an advice columnist. And Ann Landers, bless her heart, said, "If you do with food what the alcoholic does with alcohol, or the drug addict does with drugs, then this might be a program for you." My earliest memories are of wanting to get more food, of sneaking whatever it was that I could sneak. Dry Ovaltine was one of my first memories. It's not the sexiest food, but I could find it. It was in a bottom drawer, and I remember that. So I went to my first meeting when I was 15 years old because I was desperate. And I did, and everybody there was, you know, at least twice my age. I did not want to be there. I would have been, you know, anywhere else, at 15 years old, the mall with friends, wherever, but I knew that I belonged. I knew that you all were like me. I had never heard anybody else, talk about what they did with food, the way you did, the way I, you know, what I did with food. But I did not get recovered, at that meeting. And until actually June of the year 2000. So by the grace of God, one day at a time, I have not had to abuse food, binge, eat my alcoholic foods, purge. That was part of my story, and I'll get to that since then. And I don't even, like, when I speak at, you know, relapse meetings, it's like I don't even think I relapsed during that time, because to me, relapse suggests that I was unlapsed at one point. And those 15 years, I couldn't, by and large, put 2 or 3 days together. I think I got a couple of 30-day chips, or maybe a 60-day chip at one point. The longest period of time, at one point, I had 6.5 months. But usually it was just like I had a lot of day one, day one, day one. And then I couldn't make it to lunch or dinner. And I would, I am an addict. And I want to talk about, because this meeting, as I understand, is about, how I recovered with the 12 steps in the big book. So I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on what it was like, but I will tell you that what my bottom was is, I ended up doing well in school, in high school. And I'm not saying that to brag. I'm saying that because intelligence, I meet some really intelligent, really creative people in these meetings. So if we could think our way into this or figure it out, we would. But the truth is that I have a disease, a hopeless disease of mind and body, that I need a power greater than myself, in order to restore me to sanity. So at my bottom, I had gone off to school, and whereas I did well in high school, when I went off to college, I did horribly. I binged my way out of college. By the grace of God, when I got abstinent, I went back to school, finished my undergraduate, got a grad degree, and like became what I wanted to be when I grew up. But at my bottom, I was living in an apartment, and I had binged my way out of school. I had been fired from jobs, and I was living in this apartment that at that time, this was before reality TV, but it now it would have been on reality TV. It was a trash heap. There were food wrappers. You actually couldn't see the carpet there because there were food wrappers and empty containers and dirty dishes, and the cat box was disgusting. And I was suicidal, and I wanted to kill myself. And I was living in Houston, Texas at the time. I grew up in Texas. And I was another, thing for you guys under 30. I was looking in the Yellow Pages, which is a book with phone numbers in it. I was looking under gun shops to buy a gun. And because I was serious, this was not going to be like one of those, attempts. I was going to do it. But the problem was, is I didn't want people to find me in this trash heap of an apartment, right? That just horrified me. So I needed to clean up my apartment clean enough so that it would be suitable for me to kill myself. But if I could get my S together long enough to clean up my apartment to kill myself, then I wouldn't have a reason to kill myself anymore. So that was my dilemma. Suicide had always been my trap door. And my trap door was closed, and I realized I was going to have to go on like this. And that was my bottom. So, and I'll read you, and that was my step one. So I'll read you in the big book in step one. Well, actually, this is in, there is a solution. It says, page 25, it says, if you're a seriously alcoholic or compulsive overeater, as we were, we believe there is no middle of the road solution. We were in a position where life was becoming impossible. And if we had passed into the region from which there is no return through human aid, we had but two alternatives. One was to go on to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of our intolerable situation as best we could, and the other to accept spiritual help. And so what I did was, and I believe this was spiritual help. I told one of my friends, who's not in program. She lived in California. She knew that I was a compulsive overeater. And by the way, I dabbled into bulimia, but I was a fat bulimic. I couldn't even do that right. All I did was I would purge and binge again, and purge and binge again, and then I would pass, be too tired to purge. So I told her about the situation, and she came out to Texas, and together we cleaned up my apartment clean enough so we could get a cleaning woman in there. The deal was if I would go back to California with her and go to a meeting every day and work this program like a job, which I did. I was fortunate enough that I had some money saved up for a rainy day. And this was as rainy as it could get, I thought, and it was. So I quit my job, and I ended up, this is another story, but I ended up moving to California. and going to a meeting every day. And I had to. I believe that I have a severe form of this disease, and I needed mega doses of the medicine, and the medicine were the 12 steps. So I worked the 12 steps very imperfectly. I was lucky enough when I came into that first meeting in a church basement when I was 15 years old, and I looked at a big book. I had no idea how these steps I didn't even know the step. I mean, I saw the steps on the page. I was like, this didn't have nice chapters. And I am not bashing OA literature. I mean, there's a lot of great OA literature, and it's divided into nice, neat, you know, chapters and everything with the steps. And I was like, I don't understand, you know, how these people in the 1930s relate to me. And I was lucky enough to have people who, you know, sat down and explained things and said, okay, this is where step three is, and this is where whatever. So if,
10 minutes,
you know,
mm-hmm.
Oh, thank you. If us, you know, obnoxious big book thumpers, you think if you were like me and you think, I don't understand how this applies to me, call me or call, you know, call one of us obnoxious big book thumpers and ask them, say, you know, can you help me? Or, you know, get on some great meetings that, you know, this meeting, because there is just a whole lot in there that was unlocked for me when I worked the steps. And what happened, you know, what it was like, well, you heard what it was like. What happened is, like, for the first time in my life, I was not binging, and I knew it had to be a power greater than myself. So for step two, I feel like I almost took steps three and two kind of backwards, because I followed direction. I turned my will and my life over to the care of God. And for the first time in my life, I wasn't eating. And so I knew it had to be a power greater than myself. That's how I came to believe. So in step two, so in We Agnostics, it says, this is on page 53. And this still is one of my favorite things in the big book. It says, when we became alcoholics or compulsive overeaters, crushed by a self-imposed crisis, we could not postpone or evade. We had to fearlessly face the proposition that either God is everything or he is nothing. God either is or he isn't. What is our choice to be? So I had to make a choice, and I have to make a choice every day. And I'm kind of a geek, and I like numbers. So I think of it in percentage wise. Either God has to be 100% or 0%. It's all or nothing. You know how they say, you know, we're addicts, or, you know, all or nothing thinking is bad. This is one area where all or nothing thinking, black and white thinking, is great. So God can't be, my higher power can't be 95%. And what my boss thinks of me be 5%, or, you know, God is 98% and what my sister thinks of me be 2%. God is either 100% or he's 0%. And so, you know, when I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity, I was like, okay, I'm going to allow, you know, for God being 100%, you know, that, you know, my choice is A, that he is. And then step three for me, oops. Okay. So step three, you know, when it says turn my will and my life over to the care of God, that was really kind of confusing for me. I was like, I don't know how you do that. And for me, it's, I compare it. I have a bicycle. I like to ride bikes. And maybe even if you don't know how to ride a bike, this will make sense to you. But to me, it's like, I don't know what turning my will and my life over to the care of God means until I start trying it. I could give you a book or a 3-volume set by Lance Armstrong, you know, the bicycle racer, that says how to ride a bike. And you could read the whole thing and get on a bike and still not know how to ride a bike. You have to get on and start pedaling. So I had to get on and be like, okay, I think God's will is that after this meal, that I not continue eating more food. I think it might be getting up and putting the dishes in the sink. And now I think God's will might be that I brush my teeth. I mean, I'm serious. That sounds ridiculous, but when I first put down the food, that is how basic it was. And sometimes I had to think of, okay, what God's will isn't, and do the opposite. You know, it's like, well, it isn't that I stay in bed after the alarm goes off. So it's going to be that I get up and I make my bed. You know, it was next right thing. It says on page 62 in the big book, God was going to be our director. He is a principal. We are his agents. He is the father. We are his children. Most good ideas are simple. And this concept was the keystone to the new and triumphant arch through which we pass to freedom. And I like that it says that it's simple, because I will complicate the hell out of anything, You give me something simple, and I will just, you know, I will pick it apart and make it complicated. This is simple, you know. It's like, if I start overthinking it, then no, it's like, okay, what is God's will not? Do the opposite. So step three, then step four and five, where I did the inventory. And this is where I definitely needed a guide, because I tried to do step four and five on my own, or step four on my own. And I brought it to my sponsor at the time, and I had my three columns. And for those of you familiar with the big book, you'll know what I'm talking about. And she said, "Where's your fourth column?" I said, "What are you talking about? On page 65, there are three columns. I don't know what you're talking about." And she said, "Oh, there's a fourth column." And that's where the fourth column is my part. So for those of you not familiar with that part, is that I'm writing down, you know, my resentments and my fears, and then looking at, you know, why is this a problem for me? And why did I have to do this? Because I found out that food, I was using food as my solution, that I had no idea how to deal with the normal feelings that people feel. Whereas normal people, you know, grow up, and if they're angry or they're fearful or they're whatever it is, then somehow intuitively, without this book, they know how to handle those things. I grew up, I had no idea. Fear, I grabbed, you know, what was the easiest solution for me, which was food. You know, I am constitutionally different from my fellows. And so the inventory showed me those defective, for lack of a better word, because we use the word defects, those defective parts of, you know, my brain that, you know, and there's no shame in that. It's defective, you know, just like if I were born, you know, with four fingers instead of five. You know, there's no shame, but it is my responsibility to address it. So steps four and five showed me what to do with those defects of character. And the biggest one for me was fear. This book showed me, well, first of all, when I put down the food, I found out that I was like completely full of fear about everything. I was afraid to open my mail. You know, I would get a letter with a return address from my landlord or something, and I was terrified to open it. Oh my gosh, they sold the building and I'm going to have to move. And I would have to pray, okay, God, just help me to open the mail. But it shows me, whoops, it says about fear. Sorry, I lost my place again, that it's an evil and corroding thread. There we go. Evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. And when you think of something as being corroding, like for me, fear, it's not just that it's uncomfortable at the time, you know, without the food to anesthetize, but corroding. If you think of something like corrosion, like if you've ever had corroded batteries, it's over time, it just eats into stuff. You know, a corroding thread isn't just like this thread, it's gonna like mess up the whole fabric. Slowly it eats away. And so that's why I have to learn what to do with fear. So then after giving away my inventory, so then I worked step six and seven. And for me, step six and seven, I'm really glad this was especially, I mean, of course, I am grateful for sponsors who took me through this, but I'm especially grateful in step six and seven, because step six and seven in the big book are deceptively short paragraphs. It's like nothing. It's like, okay, give me something to go on here. And what was explained to me, and the way I see step six and seven and the way I recovered, is for me, step six is contrary action, that I can't ask God to, you know, remove my impatience if I am, you know, doing that when the store clerk is taking too long. I have to act my way into right thinking. I can't ask God to remove my resentment against my mother if I am responding with snippy texts, or I have to act as if that character defect has already been removed until it's removed. Now, is it my responsibility to remove the defect? No. And so I'm going to be imperfect when I'm acting as if. But I can act my way into right thinking. I can't think my way into right acting. So I can take that contrary action. I don't know if you guys ever watched Seinfeld, but another old reference, God, this tape is going to make me sound like I'm 100 years old. But anyway, but there was an episode where George did the opposite of every inclination he ever had, like just the opposite. Like he would meet women and tell them that he lived with his parents and his life turned out great. Now, I'm not saying, you know, do that.
10 minutes.
But
10
for,
minutes.
Oh, thank you. But for me, it was like, okay, I'm fearful. I don't want to do this thing. I don't want to volunteer for this thing. So I was like, okay, how do I ask God to remove my fear. And then how do I work step six around it? I do the opposite. I go ahead and take that action so that God can lift that fear out of my heart. So steps eight and nine, if you were near those steps or on those steps or worried about those steps, the best advice that I got or thing that somebody said is eight is not nine. When I am making a list, don't freak out about, oh my gosh, I can't put this person on my list because there is no way I am making that amends. I made the list, and by the time I got to step nine, God had given me the willingness to make the amends that I needed to make. There was one amends to my boss that I thought I had written out my amends, and my sponsor had me do it on index cards. And the reason why she had me do it on index cards, 3x5, no bigger than that, is because I would write out what the amends was going to be. And anything longer than a couple of sentences was not an amends. It was about explaining and making you not be mad at me. So, but there was one particular amends to a boss that I was going to, because I had told all sorts of lies to this boss, and I was going to make the amends for, you know, everything except this one lie that I told that I thought, ugh, I can't mention that one. And so I'm all ready to make my amends. And I go to his office and I put my hand on the doorknob. And when I put my hand on the doorknob, it was just like this feeling that I had that God said, no, we're going to do the whole thing. We're going to tell him everything. And I did. And he ended up writing letters of recommendation for me for subsequent jobs. That is a miracle. That's an absolute miracle. That's God doing for me what I could not do for myself. So step 10, the thing about step 10, oh, and well, good news about step through nine is we don't have to do them perfectly because we get to do over and over and over again. And that's what step 10 is. Step 10 for me is steps one through nine or four through nine. We take steps one, two, and three every day, but it's steps four through nine over and over and over again. So we don't have to do these steps perfectly because step 10 is just, you know, wash, lather, you know, Apply, lather, rinse, repeat. In fact, on page 84 of the big book, so it says, Bill uses the word continue four times in half the paragraph. He says, this thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. And then he goes on to talk about how to do this. Bill was a wordsmith, right? Did he, in this one paragraph, could he not come up with any more words? No, I believe that continue is repeated four times in this because it's telling me, don't let up. You know, we cannot rest on our laurels. This program, you know, I can't use willpower against the food, but I'm going to have to use willpower in aligning my will with God's. This program does take work. You know, it takes work. It takes footwork. I've got to continue every day to do those things, that the footwork, that so that I can be put into a place to receive the gift of abstinence and recovery. So I do a daily written 10 step. If you're interested in how I do it, you know, give me a call. My number is in there. I won't go through all the details and everything, but it just means that every day I have to look at my behavior. I have to look at my feelings, my character defects, and address them. And if I don't, it's like if I never flossed. You know, that stuff builds up in between until it becomes a problem. And pretty soon, you know, the dentist is coming at me with, you know, one of those sharp things. You know, pretty soon I'm going to be having an emotional slip, which can lead me to a physical slip, which is going to lead me to the food. I just can't afford to have that stuff build up. Step 11, the thing looking at step 11, the thing that I love this about this is, it says, I mean, a lot of you have heard, and if you haven't, and if you're new or newish, one of the coolest parts of the big book is in step 11 on page 86 and 87. Cause it tells us what to do when we get up, what to do throughout the day, and what to do when we go to bed. And I don't think you have to wait, this is my personal opinion, until you're actually on step 11 for this to be useful. I started reading this before I was officially on step 11. But for the waking up part, it says, and step 11 is all about, you know, prayer and meditation, growing that relationship with a power greater than myself that has removed my problem. But just like any good friendship or relationship, it takes care and feeding and maintenance. You know, I've got to make quantity time so that there can be quality time. I have to nurture that. If I don't nurture that relationship, then it's going to wither. So it says in the morning, you know, one of the suggestions is, on awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. And I, the thing that I love about that is that it says 24 hours ahead. It doesn't say, on awakening, look at your life, figure out what's wrong with it, and make a long-term plan. Because that's what I want to do. That's, you know, oh my gosh, I don't have enough this, or oh my gosh, what am I going to do? Where my retirement? Or it doesn't say don't plan. I'm not saying don't plan for your retirement, or don't, you know, but it says, but look at 24 hours. Look at the 24 hours, because I can only be with God in today. That just for today stuff is good advice, as far as I'm concerned. I look at today and I let God handle everything beyond today. And I have like a minute and a half left. So I'm going to talk about step 12, which is carrying the message, which doesn't seem like sufficient time to give to like the basis of our program. This is not a self-help program. This is an other help program. When, you know, Bill W, you know, the first AA, wanted to drink, he didn't sit on a mountaintop and gaze at his navel. He carried the message to another alcoholic. And it didn't even matter if that other alcoholic got sober, carried the message. The only way I can keep it is if, you know, if I reach out. And because you all, because it's a debt that I can't repay. It is a debt that I can never repay, but I can begin to repay it to my higher power by carrying it to some of his kids. So, because you all have given me so much. So anyway, I've got, like, according to my timer, like 27 more seconds. So I'm going to leave it on the clock. Thank you for asking me to speak. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Rachel K.